Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 7 of The Matchup, a storytelling podcast from St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where you, the listener, gets to decide who told the most compelling story. I'm your host, Jason Franklin, and today it is my pleasure to welcome back two veterans at this point.
Woo-hoo.
The Reverend Nancy Vaders and Dixon Kinzer. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having us again.
I'm really happy for y'all to be here. For those of you who are parishioners here at St. Paul's, we had some audio tech issues like we do today. And so now we are using our wireless mics and we are basically portraying out to the entire nave.
No stress on that one.
So who knows what's going on, how awesome this is going to be. But
it's basically like one of those live shows when they record a podcast live.
Exactly.
Except we have no audience.
Except we have no audience. It feels...
Wait, what if someone comes early to the Wednesday Eucharist?
I know. We've got to be out of here before the Wednesday Eucharist.
They are going to get more than they bargained for.
Nancy.
Yes.
I checked this morning.
Oh, no.
And of the three episodes you've done so far, Worst Apostle, Best Apostle, and Creepiest Away from the New Testament, you are winning two of the three.
Yes. Which two am I winning?
You are winning Worst Apostle.
Worst Apostle?
Yep. And Peter. Creepiest Story from the New Testament.
Beheading of John the Baptist.
But Lucy has you beat on Best Apostle.
You know what? That's fine.
She
went for Mary Magdalene, yep. And it's just, you know, she went for the sob story. It's fine. It's fine.
Dixon, my friend, you have not won any yet. The polls are not good for you. What's happening?
I don't know.
Today might be your day, though.
I feel like it's because I'm too talented.
That's fair.
And it's like a pity vote for my rival.
It's a pity vote.
I feel like this is my day.
Good. So you're feeling good about your chances today.
I'm feeling strong about this story. I'm excited to tell it. And it is weird.
So okay.
It could be your day.
It's good.
Okay.
What's it been like for you both recording these episodes so far? Was it what you expected? Is it different? Is it hard?
The first one was really intimidating because Sarah had already recorded one and I had not. And I came in and she had like 14 books and 6 pages of notes. And I was like, I'm just here by myself. So I was really intimidated. But every other one, like after the first one,
yeah,
it's been really fun.
Good.
Yeah. It's nerve wracking in the sense that you know you're being recorded and you want to deliver a good story, but also you have notes and you don't want to get the details wrong because you want to be faithful. So I'm feeling more comfortable about it now that I've done it a couple of times. Yeah.
Okay.
We're on.
Even being projected into the nave.
It's getting ready for our live tour. That's what we're practicing.
Oh, best of luck.
So throughout October, we are exploring spooky things. Last week, we covered the creepiest story from the New Testament. This week, we are covering best supernatural event in the Bible. And when Nancy and Dixon were given the prompt, we used a Wikipedia description for supernatural. Thank you, Wikipedia, which describes supernatural as encompassing supposed phenomenon or entities that are not subject to the laws of nature. Ooh. The term is attributed to non-physical entities such as angels, demons, gods, and spirits, and it also includes claimed abilities embodied in or provided by such beings, including magic, telekinesis, levitation, precognition, and extrasensory perceptions.
Whoa.
Dixon, are there a lot of supernatural stories in the Bible?
Okay. I have a thought about this. No.
Okay.
There are no supernatural stories in the Bible. Mm-hmm. Because we should establish this. Even though we're gonna work with this category as it's written, there is no such thing as supernatural.
Okay.
There is only what God has created. And so in the sense that there would be like the natural world that God has created and then some supernatural world that's like other than or different, if all of it is God's creation, the heavens and the earth and the whole thing, then there isn't something that's not natural in the sense that God has made it. So
see what you did there.
I didn't like that. So I think that in that, this category, like it was part of a particular phase of human development and consciousness where like more magical and supernatural approaches to the world or the way that we explain things that are mysterious and unknown. But I would say that if you really wanted to be faithful biblically, that it's all the realm of God's activity. However, the way that some of these stories get told is kooky, and they ascribe, writers can ascribe certain kinds of very unusual circumstances, events, and abilities to people that is part of the storytelling device. So that's how I would answer that question.
That is a good answer.
Oh.
Nancy, you want to follow it up with anything?
I mean, I agree, right? So it's the created realm. So it's not like one versus the other. Like it's all within the realm of God. But there are some messed up things happening here. And I think that it's also like it's human nature to want to explain a supernatural event in a way that other people can understand, like to try to normalize it. And the Bible doesn't really do that. Mm. Like they're not trying, these stories, you're not trying to normalize them
because
these are stories about God.
Yeah.
And so it's fascinating. And there, I think there's just a ton of weird, spooky stuff.
Yep.
In every book of the Bible.
Okay. Even Numbers?
Especially Numbers.
Especially Numbers.
Supernatural if you don't fall asleep.
In each episode, our two guests will present their case. We'll talk a little about it. And after the episode, you, the listener, get to vote on who told the most compelling story. I'm the only person who knows what story each person is going to tell until now. Nancy, are you ready to present your case for best supernatural event in the Bible?
Always picks me first.
Not always.
Ever since the first episode.
Wait, has it been always?
Ever since the
first. Oh, no, the first episode you went second.
Yeah, I did, because you're feeling sorry for
me. But Dixon,
never gone second.
Yeah, Dixon's never gone
second. Ooh, so maybe, okay, I got you. All right, so I just want to start this off by saying that I think this all happened because Dixon and I are huge Stranger Things fans. Right. And we might be a little obsessed with Stranger Things.
I love
and if you use the music from Stranger Things in the intro, we wouldn't be sad. That might be expensive.
Put a link to Stranger Things in the show notes.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
It's true.
So Stranger Things is like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's set in the 80s. So there's all this kind of 80s nostalgia that we love because that's when we were kids. And so, you know, it just takes you right back to your childhood. But the great thing about it is that all these supernatural things and Stranger Things that are happening in the most basic, normal town to the most basic, normal people. So Hawkins is the town where, you know, all this crazy stuff goes down. And it's just a quiet, there's nothing special about it. Like, it's not known for anything. Like, there's no, you know, it's like a sleepy town with working class people, you know, living in like 80s split levels. It's amazing. And so all these kind of weird and creepy and extraordinary things start happening in this very normal place. I mean, horrifying things, but extraordinary. So that's kind of my love of Stranger Things is the ordinary and the supernatural. And my best supernatural event in the Bible is something very unexpected that happened to a very normal set of people in a very normal time and place. And you may not think of it as spooky, but it definitely involves like fear and anxiety and confusion and even murder. Okay, we're going to get to this. So even though we typically focus on the story, the joy within the story, it is wildly supernatural and overwhelming, I think. So my best supernatural event in the Bible is the birth of Jesus, the incarnation.
Awesome.
Oh, come on.
Oh, and I'm going to like kind of cheat a little bit, put some annunciation in there and things like, I know. You're thinking I'm confusing Christmas trees and pumpkins. It's like Walmart right now. Like you walk into Walmart and you're like, what is it? What? Where are we? It's like Santa's on one side and like Jack Skellington's on the other. But yeah, stick with me because this story is not just about cute babies and the manger. Like, it's Nightmare Before Christmas material, which Jason and I have a huge opinion about this. Because it is a Nightmare Before Christmas is a Halloween movie.
Absolutely, 100% disagree. It is a Christmas movie.
That sounds like a future episode of The Matchup.
Oh, my gosh. It's a Halloween. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. It's Halloween.
It's Christmas. It's got Christmas in the title.
It has Nightmare in the title. Oh, my gosh. Okay, fine.
Okay,
we digress. Okay, so I'm cheating a little bit because I'm just going to squash this whole narrative together. Like, I'm going to be, time and place does not matter to me.
Okay.
So I'm including stuff like the Annunciation and, you know, the Epiphany story and all that good stuff. So let's talk about Mary first. So Mary is just this ordinary young woman, right? She's betrothed to this nice dude, I'm sure, named Joseph, and they're, you know, they're shopping at Williams-Sonoma and getting ready for their wedding. So, but she's planning for, I'm not trying to call Mary basic. Oh gosh, that was just in the nave. but they're planning for this very normal life. She's a young woman. She's betrothed. They're going to start a family. You know, it's just this very, there's nothing abnormal about Mary's situation. She's planning to start a life with Joseph. So she's thinking about the life ahead of her. I'm just making this part up. She's chilling at home, right? There's not a lot going on in Mary's life. And all of a sudden, Gabriel shows up. Archangel Gabriel. So what do you may think, if you've looked at artistic renderings, this is the Annunciation scene, right? So this is the moment where Gabriel is telling Mary that she's going to give birth to the Son of God. No big, it's fine. So I want you to imagine, what does Gabriel look like? Does he look like a normal dude? No. I mean, he may have human features, right? It's kind of weird, androgynous, like person coming in, but it's not a Precious Moments angel. Okay, that is not what this, and I mean, actually, if you think Precious Moments angels are horrifying in and of themselves. Yes. So maybe he is a Precious Moment.
Hopefully he doesn't look like a Demogorgon.
So, well, that's what I was thinking. But in the way that the Demogorgon is scary is because it's this creature from another realm that is all of a sudden in your realm where the two do not typically cross. And so that's what's happening in this moment. Think about it. You're Mary. Here comes this supernatural being that we know looks weird. Okay, we don't know exactly. It may not be, you know, wings and halos. However, this dude ain't right. And he comes in and he tells her that she is going to be the God-bearer, the mother of God. And she is taking it back. So I'm going to read a little bit from the Bible, which I said I wouldn't do, but I'm going to do. This is what Gabriel says to Mary. "Greetings, favored one. The Lord is with you." But she was much perplexed by his words and pondered what sort of greeting this might be. Does that seem, that seems like a very polite way of saying, holy crap, what is going on here? And so she has a bunch of practical questions, you know, as you would imagine, like, hey, you know, I'm a virgin. I'm supposed to be marrying this dude, Joseph. This is a lot to take in and I don't understand. And I want you to think about this moment, like the supernatural nature of this moment and all the fear and trepidation she must have had. You know, forget coming into contact with a supernatural being, but also realizing what he's telling her, the impacts that will have on her life. She's going to be rejected by Joseph, is probably her first thought. Yeah. She's going to be rejected by her family, by the community around her. She could very easily be killed for this. And so all of this, I'm sure, is just marinating and simmering. And a supernatural stranger just interrupted her entire world. Mm-hmm. And that is the moment where she becomes a young woman transformed into the Theotokos, the God-bearer, which is the only fancy word I'm going to use in this whole podcast. So while this is a moment of joy, and we think of Mary, and we think of the Magnificat, and we think of her beautiful acceptance of this new reality, but you also have to think about that initial fear that she must have had when the supernatural being basically says, your whole world is about to turn upside down. See what I did there? And it's not an initial acceptance. She has questions. She's afraid. Her world and the supernatural world have just collided in this very unexpected way. So that's Mary. So Joseph also has his own kind of like visit from a supernatural being. Now this comes in the form of a dream, like Freddy Krueger, but nicer. And telling him that it's obvious that if he finds out that Mary is pregnant, that he's going to reject her and he's going to, you know, Joseph is a nice guy, so he's probably not going to call for her to be killed or anything, but he's certainly not going to marry her. And he has a vision and he has a dream. And so they're telling him that you have to accept Mary in this new situation. This is what's going on here. This is the story of God and you are a part of it. And something like that, his acceptance of Mary would be unheard of without some kind of supernatural intervention. So Mary and Joseph. They travel to Bethlehem. They have to be counted for the census. And as the story is told, you know, Jesus is born in the middle of nowhere and this kind of like shelter that they have to find out of pure desperation. And so the incarnation and God becoming human happened in the least important place to the least important people. And you know the rest of the story because you've heard Linus tell it to Charlie Brown.
Yes.
Or you've read it in the Bible, whatever. You know, I don't know how you get your sources. And
Great Pumpkin.
Yeah. Not being aired this year. And so another supernatural event within this kind of like birth narrative are the shepherds. So again, the most ordinary of people that you can find, minding their own business, hanging out, the sky opens wide. And all of a sudden, these supernatural, again, not precious moments, angels, are proclaiming something to people. Can you imagine? I mean, it does say in the Bible they were terrified. It uses the word, I mean, as one would be.
Yep.
And so you have this whole supernatural, like, kind of cracking open of the sky, coming down, telling them that this thing you've never heard about is happening, and you need to go tell people about it. So obviously, you know, they're terrified. This is an unbelievable story. And now they're all of a sudden like evangelists and prophets, and they have to go out and tell others. And so, again, this is the supernatural coming into forceful contact with the most ordinary of humanity. Mm. And I think in that moment, like that is an extreme example of any kind of encounter that any of us have with God. It always is something extraordinary amongst the ordinary moments of our lives. So shepherds have become prophets. And the other supernatural thing that I love about the story, this is where the murder comes in. You got to have some good, nothing says Christmas like murder. So King Herod hears about this, and he wants to kind of figure out, is this going to like trump my power? Like, is this, you know, because that's all he cares about. All he cares about is maintaining power. So he's like, I'm going to find this baby and we're going to figure this out because I can't have anything encroach upon my own power. So basically he's like, hey, Magi, let me know when you find this baby, just let me know where he's at. Like, just curious, you know, I want to send him a card too. It's great. I've got a present for him. And so the Magi kind of, you know, they get this vibe from Herod that all is not well, and they leave by another way. They don't tell Herod. They don't go back to Herod. They don't tell Herod where Jesus is. You know, they get that something kind of sinister is happening here. So what does Herod do? Normal reaction? Just, you know, oh, well, oh, darn, I don't know where he is. No, he decides to murder any male child under the age of 2. It's the massacre of the innocents. So why I love this story is not baby murdering,
but
because it is not, there's sometimes, you know, this story gets so normalized to us because we hear it every year and we have all these rituals around it and we, you know, it's all, but amongst the joy and beauty of that story is the really sinister and evil, you know, kind of nature of humanity. Mm. So it kind of showed us who these people are. So this supernatural event showed us who Mary was, showed us who Joseph was, showed us that shepherds could become, you know, prophets, and that kings could become murderers. So while this story is so well known, I think it also, we need to realize that this was the most supernatural thing happening to the most ordinary people. And look what it did to people. It showed their true nature. Mm. And that's why I think it's the best supernatural story in the Bible.
Yeah.
Nice.
Merry Christmas.
It's interesting, given our caveat going into this storytelling piece about how there is no supernatural, what you're really describing as supernatural is the meeting of heaven and earth.
Yes.
And which is God's intent the whole time since, you know, Genesis 3 is to like bring heaven and earth back together as one unified whole. And that's the promise at the end of scripture. And so these moments of like what you're calling quote unquote supernatural are these moments of the heavens breaking into the earth, like the veil is torn away. And that's the Annunciation, where the angel and people are in the same realm.
Right.
That's where the angels show up to the prophets, you know, or to the shepherds and stuff, like these moments of heaven coming to earth and how all that's happening in this little baby that gets born.
And how humanity is extraordinary to God. Like that's the story of the incarnation, is that God is extraordinary to us, but also we are extraordinary to God. And so that just blows a hole in the whole gang. Like it's a game changer. Like it really, and it's all happening kind of in these just like very literal, obvious ways. Like, oh, Mary's life is interrupted. Here comes Gabriel. Like, oh, the shepherds are just living their normal lives, and it's interrupted by God. And that's all of us.
Yes.
That's all of us.
I was envisioning, like, how cool would it be if the shepherds were just hanging out and all of a sudden you flash to that scene from last season of Stranger Things with the guitar solo.
Yes.
Like, down, like with this crazy guitar solo, and there was like, whoa, what is happening?
Shepherds are the original Hellfire Club. OG.
Dixon, did you even consider the incarnation when you were thinking of supernatural events?
Not even close. No. Nice. Although I was taking notes for my Christmas Eve sermon.
Oh, there you go.
Angels are demigods.
Also, by the way, pull back the curtain. Nancy had written her story right there like it was a sermon. So she had like sermon notes.
You know what? You've got notes.
I got notes.
How do I know that they're not sermon-esque?
You know those spelling mistakes? I love that, though. And even though it's the Jesus trump card, which isn't totally fair, it's really good.
And I did mush a bunch of stuff together. It's not just one thing.
All right, Dixon, you want to make your case?
Okay. My best supernatural story from the Bible is not from the New Testament. I need to take you back in time. I need to take you back to the era of the kings, which is the time in Israel's history. It's after they have come out of Egypt and after they have established themselves as God's people, as this kind of confederation of tribes. They've become a nation like God promised they would to Abraham, and yet they wanted kings like their neighbors had, and these kings, as God warned them, ended up being a bad idea. They had Saul first, who was not great. He kind of went crazy. Then they had this king that worked for him, David, and then David's son Solomon succumbs to the power of the king, just like his daddy did. And among many, many things, ends up exploiting his own people as slaves to build the temple to the God that liberated them from slavery. Yeah. And it fractures the whole nation. So you've got 10 of the tribes go to the north in the northern kingdom, and then 2 go to the south, the southern kingdom. The northern is called Israel. The southern kingdom is called Judah. So in this time, you've got prophets rising up to call the people back to God's way. Like, don't forget your story. Like, you had a reason you were supposed to be in this thing with God in the first place, which is to reunify heaven and earth and to make things as they're meant to be, to the new creation. And the prophets that are functioning in this era of the kings, the dominant prophets are Elijah and Elisha. And the story I want to tell you is at the time where Elijah, who's kind of like the guy, you remember Elijah because he's the still small voice prophet. He's also the prophet that has the confrontation with the priests of Baal at the top of Mount Carmel with the wet wood and the fire that comes down. He's the prophet that called down fire on people that were his enemies.
He's been through it.
He's been through it. And he's about to die, except he doesn't die. He's about to actually be assumed into heaven. Again, a picture of the reunification of heaven and earth. And so he's going to pass the mantle to his successor, Elisha. And by the way, the mantle is not just sort of like a title like rector, but it doesn't really have anything that goes with it other than the word. Mantle was like literally a garment. It was like a cloak kind of thing. And so he's going to like pass his cloak to Elisha. And this whole thing happens at the Jordan River, and Elijah takes off his cloak and he slaps it on the Jordan and it parts, and they walk through, it says, on dry land. And then the chariot of fire comes and collects Elijah, takes him up, he's ascended into heaven and kind of passes between the veil. Then Elisha picks up the mantle, smacks the Jordan again, goes across it. It parts for him. He goes across it.
Convenient.
What if it didn't?
And he goes to Jericho. When he's in Jericho, they come out to him and they're like, hey, our water has gone bad and our lands won't produce anything. And he's like, got it. Bring me some salt. So they bring him some salt. He throws some salt in the spring. The water becomes potable and the land becomes fertile again. And then this happens. He leaves Jericho and heads down from there toward Bethel. As he was walking along the road, I'm reading from the Bible now.
Just
so you know, this is in the Bible.
It's right? A little Bible, though. It's not like Lucy's giant Bible.
It's a regular size Bible. Lucy would agree with me. All right. He's heading down, went up to Bethel. As he's walking along the road, some youths came out of the town and jeered at him. Go on up, you bald head, they said. Go on up, you bald head. Elisha turned around, looked at them, and called down a curse on them in the name of the Lord. Then two bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 of the youths.
Jeez.
And he went on to Mount Carmel, and from there turned to Samaria.
All right.
Totally normal.
The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Nancy, I'm curious. Do you know that story? And what questions
Yes.
did that surface for you?
Well, you know, I don't like bears in general. But go up, you bald head, is what we say to you when you go up to the pulpit to preach. So that's get on up there.
Those who have ears, let them hear.
Bet you'd like those bears to come in then, wouldn't you?
It is. It's a story.
It's a weird. It is such. It seems so random because this, like, huge event and like transfer of power has happened, and then you're all of a sudden like teen gang bullies
right.
and bears. What is
and
why?
So like tally because there's like this 42 of them were mauled by the bear. It's like
yeah, wait, how many were mauled?
42.
42 of
the youths.
The youths.
That bears. Seems like a lot of work for two bears.
Yeah,
I read one translation of that, and it even it specifically called them she bears, and I was like,
yes, yes.
Oh, I like that even
yes,
better.
Yes.
Wow, okay.
That's good. No wonder that she took out 42. I like that.
It's so funny too because it's just like this short little story that just quickly moves on to something else. It's not like, did everybody get that?
Can we wait for a second?
Rewind.
Just came down, mauled all these kids. I mean. What there's leaves that they are bleeding, you know, like it's a troubling story on one hand too, because you're like, not only is it weird and angular in its, you know, narrative beats, bears mauling kids, it's got bears mauling kids. And like, God seems to be like on board with this. And this was like the curse that Elisha calls down and it happens like, It makes you kind of ask a lot of questions, and it's why people, I feel like, or one of the many reasons people are like, I don't like the Old Testament, you know?
Bear maulings.
We just get rid of it, you know?
Why is Elisha so sensitive?
Yeah. Like, what's the deal?
I mean, he just got this mantle, like, he's the head honch
yeah.
now. Like, why would he let these kids bother him?
So I did some research.
Okay.
I have some things to share.
As you do.
So, okay, first off, when they're calling him bald head, all right?
Not the island.
Not the island. I obviously relate to this as a bald man, but there's a couple of different things that could be going on here. One is that Elijah was known to be like a hairy man.
Okay.
Now that could be like in his body hairiness. It could
Ew.
Also be his cloak. Like he wore a camel's hair garment, and you know, and like tied had a belt, a leather belt around his waist, which we'll come back to. Could sound familiar to you that pay attention at Christmas also. But it could be like they were recognizing him as like the prophet, but these kids are also like mocking him. Like you're sort of like your predecessor, a prophet, but you're lame because you're bald and he was hairy, you know? It also could be that some scholars are like it's about the way perhaps Elisha had his hair cut that symbolized his office as a prophet. So They were recognizing his office, and part of what's going on narratively in this thing is that there's a question about whether or not God is still with Elisha as the prophet the way he was with Elijah. Mm. One of the things that happens before this is the time when the Philistines steal the Ark of the Covenant, and God goes with the Ark, because God lives in the Ark. So there's this question like, well, Elijah just disappeared. Did God go with Elijah? And so these two miracle stories are meant to sort of establish narratively Elisha's credibility and authority. Nope, still the prophet, still the power of God. And like his predecessor, like Elijah was able to call down fire on the enemies and, you know, on these the wet wood at Mount Carmel. So Elisha has the power to invoke and call down
bears.
All right, so bears. Well, for, let me say this. You noted the number 42.
Yeah.
In Hebrew, numbers are symbolic, not quantitative, most often, especially when they show up in weird stories like this. So 42 is a number that is often symbolically associated with death and cursing in the New Testament.
Huh.
Like, there are 42 Ephraimites that are killed in battle. There's 42 relatives of Ahaziah were killed by the fire that comes down. And so it's interesting, too, like, there's only two bears. There's 42 ewes. Like, if you think about it being
she-bears,
though. She-bears. Even she-bears, regardless of their gender. Nancy,
I'm just saying they...
like, 42 kids standing around being like, I guess it's my turn next.
I know.
Guess I'll just wait.
Also, the fact that it's considered a miracle. Like... You know, in general, we'll be like, it was a miracle. And I just can't imagine like a bunch of like
bear mauling
adults watching the bear mauling going, wow, what a miracle.
What a miracle.
This world.
Elisha's like, he's like in the corner being like, those bears are hairy though, aren't they? Yeah, that's right. That's what I said.
There was a note in one of the books that where the scholar notes that because the bears, they don't kill and eat, they just maul.
Mm.
It makes it. Yeah. Supernatural in that it is not a normal
but
thing
they would naturally eat the bears. Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. Where it starts to become less problematic and even more sort of layers of interest is when you do the thing that you can do with the Old Testament and the New Testament where you pull back to about 10,000 feet and you look at the structure of the story, because sometimes the message that's being communicated isn't just in the story that you read. Yeah. It's in the arrangement of the stories and how they interact with other stories. The stories that precede this bear mauling, right, was Elijah and Elisha, and they're at a really, really prominent place in Israel's history, the Jordan River, right?
Mm.
And what you see in the way that they tell the story of Elijah and Elisha is their story, the two stories of those prophets mirror the stories of Moses and Joshua. And so there's things that Moses does that you see Elijah doing in kind of like playing the same beats. There's things Elisha does that play the same beats as Joshua. So when this transfer of power happens, you see Elijah slap his mantle down on the Jordan River. It spreads, but then it parts for him, but it says specifically that the two of them, Elijah and Elisha, walk across on dry land, which sounds like the Red Sea.
Yeah.
That's right.
The specific designation that is made at the Red Sea. So you're already seeing, oh, wait, they're
without the death, though.
They're putting a Moses flag up there.
Yeah.
Then Elisha takes it off, slaps it down, crosses back over the Jordan, which, remember, is what Joshua does with the Ark of the Covenant before they come into the Promised Land. He takes them in, and the Jordan parts, and he walks across with his people, and that's a whole another story. But the first place he goes after that to the Jordan River is to Jericho. And that's where the whole like walls of Jericho, they walk around it and they come tumbling down, right?
Yeah.
Except when Elisha, the first place he goes is to Jericho, but instead of destroying the city, he heals it, right? Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
He like offers it a regenerative kind of life. Which means that part of what the scholars say is when you get to this bear story, it's actually mirroring the conquest of the land, because the place that this is supposed to have happened, all right, is it's the same place that there had been a golden calf Baal shrine in the time of Jeroboam, the wicked king. And basically, the word for youths or boys in Hebrew doesn't mean little children. It can, but like Hebrew has like a wide semantic range. And so it also can mean young men. It can also mean like young people that are appointed for a particular kind of service, like military service or the infantry, we would say today. So when they use this word, it's na'ar is the word, they think it also can mean like basically the priests of this temple of Baal. Mm. So what you've got is one central themes of the time of the kings is like the faithfulness versus unfaithfulness to Yahweh. And here the prophet goes into the heart of one of the temples of the competing gods and basically expresses dominance in kind of like a WWE pro wrestling style way.
With bears.
Yeah, bears. Brings the bears down, right? Wow. Which... then you're like, well, wait, why bears? Well, the other thing about this area is that the traditional place that this story is set is called Deir Divan, which means the lair of the two bears.
Ooh.
Right? So in the lair of the two bears come down and defeat the enemies of Yahweh decisively to show who is the true God and who is the false God, which is weird and sounds completely backwards and barbaric to our contemporary sensibilities. But in the ancient world, they frequently use stories like this as trash talk, like pro wrestling.
It's a great way.
It's like ancient trash talk to show that Yahweh is the true God, not Baal, not your golden calves. Remember Moses' problem with the calf and Joshua's problem with it? That problem is getting solved as the story clicks forward with Elijah.
Whoa. I mean, summoning bears is not a power I would just like try to have, but if I did have it, I would use it.
Totally. You're like, I get your point in the staff meeting, but hold on one second.
I got a couple she bears I'd like to
just
introduce.
Close your
you
eyes
to.
And just go like this. Like, Nancy, are you summoning the bears again? Stop.
Like when I have my budget meeting with Tom McDowell, I'd be like, I hear you, Tom, but I have some friends I'd like to introduce you to.
Thank you to everyone that's already contributed to the Rejoice campaign. Yeah. You haven't gotten your pledge in yet.
Summoning bears.
Probably might ought to.
It's a great power. I love that. I love that story.
Yeah, I love the deep dive you took into it.
I appreciate that. I felt like I owed it to us.
Yeah. That was a great story. I have to say, I sort of started Googling to get images for the website for it. And the artwork's pretty interesting.
Ooh,
you can find
some
funky paintings.
There was an ancient tapestry, and I was like, wow, interesting.
I mean, it's not the birth of Christ, but I guess it's fine.
Did Dixon change your mind on best supernatural?
I mean, it's a great story. Is it the best supernatural event in the Bible?
Which I feel like you're backing Dixon in the corner here.
That we received from Jason?
I feel like the listeners of the matchup understand like theological significance versus entertaining weird story. And I think clearly... I have told the better entertaining supernatural event.
Okay, Massacre of the Innocents. I don't, whatever. I don't know what else you want from me. I mean, he didn't, and we're going to have bears, but I mean, I agree. It's a great, weird story.
Yeah.
Is it the best? Absolutely not.
It has a lot of overlays with your story, though, because the gospel writers pick up on the Elijah, Elisha, Moses, right. Joshua thing when they tell the Jesus story.
Right.
With John the Baptist, because he's dressed like Elijah, or Elijah, and that's even, you know, with the Passover, like you're waiting for Elijah's return, and Jesus, you know, very much steps into the Joshua. His name means, Joshua is Jesus in later Hebrew. I meant to say too, the in terms of like using like the name of a place and like kind of the contours of a local geography to tell a story. The same thing happens after the Sodom and Gomorrah story where Lot's wife turns around and turns into a pillar of salt.
Great
that
story.
Happens in the salt flats outside the Dead Sea where there's all these pillars of salt already.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Like an Aesop's fable thing.
Yeah.
So that's part of like this, you know, have the tiger get its stripes. The Bible writers use those things when they tell their stories all to communicate a theological truth.
Right. Yes, anything supernatural that we encounter, like it's just a way to show us who God is and who we are.
Mm. Yep.
That's what makes the story so great.
Yeah. Those are great stories.
It was fun to tell them.
All those hope everyone in the nave enjoyed it.
Yes, seriously.
gosh.
Well, all the cases have been presented for the best supernatural event in the Bible. And now the power is in your hands, listeners. In the episode description and notes is a link to a poll. Let us know who you think told the most compelling story. We will continue our spooky themes throughout the month, so be sure and listen. Please like and subscribe if you want to hear more. You can learn more on our webpage, thematchuppodcast.com, and follow us on Twitter at thematchuppod. Also, make sure and join our Facebook group, The Matchup Podcast, for extra information about the show. Thanks, everyone, for listening and voting. See you next time.